following is a continuation of a taped interview with Mrs. Eva Dean Edwards on June 29th, 1983.
Okay, we're talking about taking corn to the mill and grinding our own cornmeal.
And we had a sugar chest that we kept meal when Daddy bring it home. We'd pour it into this piece of furniture, you know. The meal would be in one side and the flour in the other. And when Mama started to make bread, then she'd get her rolling pin and her biscuit board and things out if she was going to make biscuits. Or if not, she just lifted that up and dipped out the meal. And we always had to sift the meal or the flour either.
Did you grind your own flour?
No, we didn't grind our own flour. We bought flour in 25-pound bags.
So you didn't grow wheat at all?
Yes, we did grow wheat. Well, wheat. I'm sorry. We did grow wheat. And they would, let's see, that got ripe. We didn't have a combine come here. I've heard Mama talk about that in Madison County. But they'd put it in the crib up here, and it seemed like, you know, just walk on it. Mm-hmm. Or use it, leave it, lay there. And then they swept it up. It came out of its little husk. Mm-hmm. They swept it up, and then on a windy day, Daddy would have that up in the wagon, and we'd lay sheets on the ground, and he'd pour it out of a big bucket down to the ground, and the wind would blow that chaff away.
What did he use the wheat for?
He had it ground, and we made graham biscuits, and they were so good. Mm-hmm. Graham flour.
Oh.
And then we had to sift that. It had a lot of stuff besides flour, you know, and that, of course, we just put that. We had a scrap bucket we called a chicken bucket, and we put everything we didn't want like that into the chicken bucket.
Mm-hmm.
And even the dishwater we saved for the slop bucket out there, and it had a lid on it and was outside. And Daddy carried that to the pig, and then we fed all the scraps to the chicken. We didn't waste anything.
So your father had flour, meal, corn?
Flour, meal, pork, and mutton, and we didn't always kill a beef. Just maybe every other year, just once in a while. My mother told me that in Madison County, before, when she was a girl, that would have been like, well, say 1900 or 1910 or something like that. They had a beef club, and like different neighbors had beef animals. So Grandpa would kill his beef this week, and they'd get it dressed. See, they couldn't keep meat a long time. Everybody in that beef club got some meat, you know. And then when, you know, that kind of was gone, well, then a neighbor would kill his beef, and then everybody would
share in that.
Well,
did your father dry beef?
No.
Do you remember that?
Mm-mm.
I can't remember.
Seems that what I remember, Daddy killed it in the winter, and we just kind of
salted it in.
No, I just can't remember, except I tell you what, all I really remember is that he killed it before Christmas, and his brothers and sisters were here, and he gave them all some, and
so
then we ate, and then it was just kind of gone, you know.
Just
it was a sort of a one-time thing, and for like one time a year anyway, but not every year.
What did your parents buy from the grocery when you were young?
Salt and crackers and things that you couldn't make here at home. And then
that's very little work.
Well, we always, and like maybe some kind of fruit, if fruit wasn't in season, and hominy. Daddy liked flake hominy, and that was something you could get in a package in the store. And oatmeal. Stores weren't full of things like they are now, you know. And a lot of times, Mama would send a basket of eggs to Rice Station. and she'd write out her grocery list and put one egg on it so it wouldn't blow away.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you this, funny thing happened. We'd leave the basket of eggs there, and maybe Daddy and I'd get on the bus and go on to town for something, you know. Then we'd come back, and this man that worked in the store would have the groceries in the basket, or in a bag, or basket and bag, whatever. We didn't try to save, you know. We just, anything we wanted, we got, but we didn't want
just
much.
Didn't need very
didn't
much.
Want much. Right. Didn't need it. And when we got back that time, the grocery bag, the basket, egg basket, was just sitting there empty. And the man said, well, I couldn't find a grocery list. And I started to say, well, Mama, you know, tell him what she how she fixed it. And I said, well, Mama always lays an egg. And there I stopped and started looking for it. And then we thought how that sounded, and we just all stood there and laughed. And but we found it, you know, so we could get the groceries. Mm-hmm. The corn, they used to just drop it like we do in the garden now and cover it up. You know, okay. Plant corn that way. And then they got a hand jobber. You know, you know what I'm talking about? A jobber, planter. And they put the corn in there, and then they did this little trick of putting it down and opening it up, and that let the corn fall down, and then they took it out.
And covered it automatically.
It covered it automatically. Now, that was a real invention when somebody invented the corn jobber. Erwin said it was in 1926 that we started raising tobacco.
In 26.
That we started. I'm sure there was tobacco. And at that time, you just put out any, you know, you could have put the whole farm in tobacco if you wanted to. There was no base. You just raised tobacco like you raised anything else, just according to the size of your field or how much you wanted to fool with. And then we burned the tobacco beds, piled wood and burned them. Now we gas them. They waited for a rain and just took a wooden peg and made a hole in the ground and set a plant out and pushed dirt back around it. But you waited for a rain. And then after that, they invented some kind of a planter, sort of like a corn jobber, that you stick in the ground, and somebody walked by you and threw a plant in there, and when you pulled a little lever and water went down with it. And you watered them out, but you didn't do that on a rainy day. So you could do that in dry weather.
But still it was hand.
It was still hand. And then the tobacco setter came along. We've had a tobacco setter for a long time, and I can't tell you when.
It's a lot quicker now, isn't it?
Oh, well, yes. And I, a neighbor woman and I tried our luck at riding a setter one time, and Erwin said we did real well. You know, we didn't miss many plants at all. But I hardly, you know, that I did it for fun that time, and I think once I did it because I was needed, and I never do that myself. There's always enough to do it, you know, don't need me.
Well, do neighbors, when you set tobacco down, do neighbors come in? And
well, Erwin has some brothers that they help each other. You know, he helps them, and they help him. And they, you know.
But it's a lot easier now. Like you said, you gas the beds instead of burning, and you have the tobacco setters and the tractors.
Erwin said then that you could raise like 600 pounds or 700 pounds to the acre. And now it's a lot more, you know, he told me that too. And that it sold from 5 cents a pound to 15 cents a pound in the 1930s.
That low?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
And he told me the seven grains that they pulled it and they put it in seven different bunches off of one stalk of tobacco. There were flies and trash and lugs, light red, no, it wasn't light red, it was long red,
mm-hmm.
and short rib and tips.
Do you know what the best grade was?
I guess it was the flames. That's the ragged around the bottom. Mm-hmm. Do you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that mm-hmm. is it.
Those are the best.
So I think he was thinking about it straight up the stalk,
uh-huh.
you know, as he told me.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the late 30s, now see, that was back in 1930 that they could get 600 or 700 pounds off of an acre. In the late 30s and early 40s, they put 400 or 500 pound of fertilizer to the acre just in the row where the tobacco was going to be set.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got 800 to 1,000 pounds. That fertilizer really helped. And in 1951, Irma and I married in 1949. So in 1951, Daddy and Irma decided they'd farm together. And they bought their first tractor, and it was a little International. They bought it new, and along with that, Irma said it's about 26 or 28 horsepower. We still have it, and he plows the garden with it.
Oh, it still works.
Yeah, it has the little cultivators that fit the rows and
perfect
do better in the garden than anything else. You know? And along with that, they got turning plows and cultivators and a mowing machine and disc harrows and a fertilized spreader and a cultipacker. They got all those. That's like a roller to break the clods. They got that tractor and all those tools new for $2,200.
You're kidding.
It was in 1951.
Does he have any, or do you have any idea how much that would be today?
Oh, no, but we got a Massey Ferguson bigger tractor for $9,000
mm-hmm.
a few years back. You know, three, four years ago, maybe.
Quite a rise in price.
And then Irman got a used tractor. I don't know what he paid for that either, but it's kind of a middle-sized tractor. We have that little one that he plows the garden, the baby one that he can use the cultivators on best, and then the big tractor that'll blow the silage into the silo, and then he's got a middle one that he uses. It has a, what does he call it, tricycle front wheels, close together, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's good for cultivation, big cultivation.
Uh-huh. So he's got certain jobs he does with the different sizes. And it was in the middle 1950s they hired a hay baler. And I think I told you that at 76. I don't know where I got that. I don't know what in the world I was thinking about. That's when the silo was built in 1976. But it was in the middle 1950s that they hired their hay bale a couple of years, and they liked that. And in 1970, they bought a hay baler. They must have hired it more than 2 years. And a rake, and they got tractor wagons. See, that,
all the hay.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And now, in the tobacco is limited, like we can raise 4,500 pounds. It's about our base.
That's a lot of tobacco.
Well, and instead of stripping it into all those grades, I think Irman divided it into two grades last year, and they baled it. And that baling takes about a third off the time of
that's
what
true.
Hand tying used to be.
What about the strippers? Did you hear... I guess a couple of years ago, I thought that...
The what?
The strippers. Where we hand-stripped it before.
Oh, okay.
And last year, or year before last, I heard them advertising the automatic strippers.
I've seen that on television.
Yeah.
But I don't know a thing about it. I don't know a thing about
that. Oh, I thought that was the greatest invention that's ever been.
Have you ever seen one?
No, I just heard it. But I know that was...
I bet they cost a lot.
That was the job I hated worse.
Yeah.
I think
now, last year, the first time ever, I helped, well, one time at Thanksgiving vacation from school, I helped them strip tobacco and thought I had a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, I helped them a lot. you know, if I didn't have to do something else. I helped strip, but it was easy, and this woman across the road helped us. She's my husband's first cousin, and she has helped him a lot of years. But last year, she and I and Erman
all stripped,
and it didn't take us long, like maybe 3 weeks or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't too cold, and we just had a good time.
Last winter was a good winter for it.
Uh-huh.
But I have stripped when the ground was frozen. And
yeah, that'd be...
That's hard
work. Yes. And then Erman told me that now they put on the ground where he raises this tobacco 2,000 to 3,000 pounds of fertilizer just over the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Spread it with the spreader, not in the rows, but just over the
whole thing.
Ground. And and that raises this 4,500 or 5,000 pounds of tobacco.
And how much property, how much land? An acre?
No, it's like it's a little less, well, like 2.5 acres.
Will raise 4,500 pounds.
Yeah, or 5,000. It varies. Like maybe this year it's 4,700, but it's always between 4,500 and 5,000.
Mm. How much did tobacco bring last year per pound average?
Seemed like $1.89 was our average. Armin always gets about as good as anybody's. You know, he tries to fix it to look nice. And so
tobacco for you really pays for itself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's not all that much work to it either. Mm-hmm. You know, now I think the hardest job about the tobacco is getting it hung into the barn. And last year there was a crew came through here and they were housing tobacco. And Erman gave them, I don't know if it was $500 or $600, and they just went out there and cut it and put it in the barn.
All of them.
They just took it by the job. Mm-hmm. And this fella who was the head of the crew, see, he took that money and paid the hands that he brought with him.
Oh, well, that's great.
And it took them about 3 days.
Oh, that's great.
And that was so good, you know, just to have that
job. Taken your husband and say his brothers to help him.
Oh, see, they would have had to work through hours, and his brothers and his other brothers, and they would have been in that for weeks. You know, I mean, 2 or 3 weeks.
Uh-huh, just getting it cut and hung. Uh-huh. Because it's such a hard job.
That is, and it's so hot. You know, they do that in, I don't know, is it 1st of September?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Last of August, 1st of September, the hottest time of the year. Really.
Yeah. That's the hottest.
Well, that's great.
Erman's getting older, and he doesn't, well, he, you know, he can climb in the barn, but
shouldn't
I always worry, you know, when he's climbing the barn. Mm-hmm. Now, and it was in 1976 we built a silo, and Erman began to raise more like from about 12 acres of corn. And they have to chop the silage. See, that takes away no more gathering corn, no more cutting and shocking and hauling and no fodder, and it just all goes into the silo. And then it has a motor on it that they run the silage down through a big trough, and he can feed about 40 cows now. We don't milk a cow.
So the time has been cut. Oh.
Well, it takes about 2 weeks to get that much corn in.
But
they don't get to work every day, maybe, for 2 weeks.
But cutting fodder would take a lot longer.
Oh, yeah. That's just, you know, hauling fodder and fooling with it in the field. And picking, for a long time, we picked corn. But now we don't do that. The corn, the cobs, the fodder, and the whole stalk of corn is just chopped up fine and blown up into that silo.
And used for feed.
Yeah.
So really,
and the cattle eat it better.
Well, you said you didn't have any milk cows.
No.
At all now.
No. The cows have calves, and the little calves just stay with their mothers out in the fields and run loose, and you don't fool with them. And then they sell them like once a year. Erman usually don't sell the little calves that are born this year. They'll sell next year.
Mm-hmm. Are these beef cattle or what kind of cattle?
Yeah, beef cattle.
Mm-hmm. Angus?
Yes. what he has right now are Angus. He tried that with Sharphorn for a long time. And then he changed to Angus.
Angus must be easier to raise here.
Uh-huh.
Easier to care for.
And Erman's cattle are all pits, you know. If he wants to take them to another pasture, he doesn't drive them toward that pasture. He just goes himself and they all follow him.
Leads them.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And any time he wants them to the barn, well, he can just go up there in his truck and wait and they come, you know.
Dad says you go ask them.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah. And there.
How many head do you have?
37, I believe, right now.
About how many do you sell off each year?
Well, let's see, about 17 or 18, I think, you know.
So that's a good cash crop.
Yeah, the tobacco and the cows keep us going.
Mm, it would.
And I found out as we get older, we want less and need less and all that. You know, I saw that with my mother when she was 96. In the nursing home, you had to think hard to think what to get her for Christmas, even her birthdays, or.
There's nothing you need.
I
can't buy my parents anything they need.
You get so you don't need as much, you don't want as much.
Well, the children being away from home.
Yeah.
I think means a lot too.
Right.
Because you don't have. Mm-hmm. You don't have to buy all the stuff you buy for them.
Uh-huh.
That's got to make a difference. I keep hoping I'm going to be rich for mine.
I got news. It's hard to get rich.
Well, we
don't have any chickens anymore.
Oh, you don't
have
chickens.
And, you know, there's just not much outside now. I mean, there's no morning chores for me to do, like go to the hen house and go carry water from the spring or all of that. Just move in. You know, it's taken care of now. Mm-hmm. And
it's a way of life that's
a way of life that used to be, just like we don't carry water anymore. We've got it pumped up, and we don't feed chickens anymore. If we want a chicken, we don't really love to eat chicken. We don't like chicken that much. Fried chicken doesn't sound much to me. If I'm going to have company and I want a fried chicken, I just go to the store and get one. But see, they didn't have that kind in the stores a long time ago. You didn't go buy chicken.
You didn't buy fresh meats, did you?
No. And there was no... Now, a long time ago, let's see how long, when I was a girl, say in the 40s, we had a big old ice box out on the porch. And we'd go to town. Now we had a car, see, in 37. Along then, we started this. We got our car, and then we realized we could bring ice home in it, and so we got an ice box. And we had it was made out of something like tarpaulin, and it was a cup-like square, rectangular thing that didn't leak. And we kept that in the back of the car, and we'd go to the ice plant and get 100 pounds of ice, and we'd bring that home, and it would just fit up into the freezer, you know. And that would last like 4 or 5 days. And then we'd go back and get some more.
So you could keep the milk and butter.
Then there was an ice truck got to pass in here. And we just had a little sign we'd stick out there on the side of the road by the mailbox. That, you know, if we just needed 50 pounds, we'd put the 50 out. And he'd stop and bring in 50 pounds.
So you could keep the milk and butter in the ice box now. What did you do with it before?
Our water, I can take you down there and show you our spring if you'd like to see. The spring itself is 2 streams of water running out of the hill into like a great big tile. It's it's not quite 3 feet across diameter, you know. And that's full all the time. Plenty of water for us to use the washing machine and take baths and everything we need, water. And then it has it spills over that all the time into, in the concrete is a rectangular thing they made. And that was our milk box, and we set the milk in buckets down into that. And when we got lunch almost ready, why, Mom would say, "Evening, run get the milk." And I'd go down there and bring the milk to the house, and it was cool. You know, it wasn't ice cold, but it was good and cool.
Mm-hmm. And would keep.
Oh, yeah, it kept. And then I took it back after lunch for supper. You know.
Well, now, when did you get electricity? Do you remember?
It was about 1956. Mm-hmm. Electricity came, they came through, setting the poles.
That made a big difference?
Oh, it made a lot of difference, you know. Then we got the electric churn. We'd had a little churn that you turn a handle and hold it in your lap to make butter. That was the first thing I bought Mama, electric churn. And then, well, the tools got to be electric, you know, like saws. And instead of a cross-cut saw that two men pull to cut a piece of wood, it got to be a chainsaw, you know, and one man could do more than two men could have done, you know.
Easily. Yes.
And we burn wood now.
We do too.
And then the electric cooking stove, and Mama got an electric cook stove right away.
Was that the first appliance your mother got? Do you remember?
I just don't know. Let's see. No, I think somebody gave us an electric clock the first Christmas after that, you know. And I bought an electric sewing machine. And Mom and Daddy had these kitchen cabinets. And that's not the same stove she had, but an electric stove and this sink put in at the same time. And under the sink is a 15-gallon hot water heater.
Oh.
Now, for the washer and dryer that we had put in just not many years ago, there's another hot water heater over there.
Okay.
And then among the first things we got was a refrigerator.
Mm-hmm. I think that was probably our first.
Mm-hmm. And we had a, as for washing the clothes, when I was a tiny little girl, the first I can remember, we had it was called Terex Perfect Washer. And there was a little thing that came with the advertisement that said, "Man may work from sun to sun, but a woman's work was never done until Terex Perfect Washer came to her kin, and now she gets through before the men."
Oh, that's perfect.
And this was it had legs, and it was a longer than it was wide thing, and it had, like a washboard, it in a circular tub like this, you know?
Oh, uh-huh.
And then you'd let this thing back that had another washboard on it that fitted this, and you put your clothes in there. We washed in the springhouse because it was out there with the water, and we heated water in a wash kettle. And you put your clothes in there, and then you'd stand back there, and you'd do this. You'd go back and forth, and it rubbed, and you counted. You know, Mom would say, "Now, these aren't very dirty. Just rub them about 50 times." So I'd stand there and work this thing, you know. And, "Oh, that's Daddy's old work clothes. They're pretty dirty." And so I'd do it 100 times, maybe, you know. And then it had a wringer screwed on it with a handle to turn. And you put them out into a tub of water.
And
that was the rinsing. And then you run them back through that same wringer and go hang them on the clothesline. Now, that was our first washing that I remember. I'm sure before that there had been washboards here and done it, you know, in a tub and washboard. Like.
Well, that was so much simpler.
But the next thing we got was a gasoline washing machine that was like, it was a Maytag, and instead of electric, because we didn't have electric, it was gasoline. And you pulled it to start it like a lawnmower.
Like a lawnmower. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it popped, you know, it just sat there and popped and made a lot of noise. But it washed just like any washing machine.
It had a
gyrator in the middle. Went back and forth. And it had a wringer on it, too. And then after electricity came, we got a square Maytag washing machine that was much like the gasoline.
Except electric.
Mm-hmm.
So it made a big difference in the women's time.
And the boy that, see, there was, here we were back here like people live, you know, and you didn't go to Richmond and hunt appliances and things, but a boy came through the community selling refrigerators. Mama's first one was a Kelvinator. He put the order in through this boy that came back. And he kind of liked this, you know, and came, when he came maybe to bring the refrigerator, he brought some little things with him and made electric lamps out of two of our kerosene lamps.
Oh, you still have those?
Uh-huh.
Beautiful.
Uh-huh. Okay. They're pretty. Uh-huh. And one...
Okay. Electricity made a lot of difference in the time the women had. But now you worked outside the home, is that right? Outside the farm?
I taught school 33 years.
Okay. Did you teach in Estill?
Yes. All of it was in Estill. I taught, I taught a one-room school and rode a horse, and our dog went with me at Hoy's Forks. And I was there about 2 months, and they moved me to our Dimple Heather taught a demonstration school, and I went there to help her. You know, I mean, I didn't do things for people to see. I was just her assistant. And she taught at Lower Bend, and I had to stay in town then. When I was in high school, I had to stay in town because the roads were muddy. And I boarded with my cousin, Paul Park. I'd go Monday morning, Daddy'd take me in the cart I was talking about, over to the road, Richmond Road, and caught the bus. Went into town, and I went to Cherry Street, where they lived, and stayed with them until Friday afternoon. I'd come back on the bus, and Daddy'd meet me and bring me home.
Yeah.
And I'd be so homesick. All through high school, I was so homesick. And Mama always said that she'd remember that I said, on Wednesday, I think, day before yesterday, I left home, and day after tomorrow, I'm going back.
Okay. So you just planted it one day at a time, really,
yeah,
to get back home.
Uh-huh.
You retired?
Yes, in 77 I retired.
But you raised a garden.
And then I was going to tell you, I taught out here at our country school a lot of years.
Was it a just one room a lot. Or 2 room?
It was a 2 room school. And I taught the first 3 grades, and then I've taught upper grade. And I've just really had a good time with these kids that I knew. Now, that's what we were talking about, that a long time ago, I knew everybody in this community and who their grandparents were and what their baby, little new baby's name was and everything, you know. But now I don't know my neighbors that well because it took away the community life.
The community life did center around those small schools, too. Mm-hmm. A lot of entertainment or
whatever. We had little programs on Friday afternoon and invited the parents in, and they'd come, and just if it was nothing but little things they learned in school that week or poems they'd say or anything was entertainment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a pie supper in the fall to make money to have to spend on things we needed at school. And we had Thanksgiving suppers. Everybody bring something and come in for Thanksgiving supper. You know, we had big crowds at those.
I started to say, parent participation was a lot better then than it is now.
Yeah. And then we had Christmas programs, you know. Anything like that. Parents were good to come in, and any time somebody misbehaved, all I had to do was just go take them home and talk to Mama. And that fixed it. They didn't do it anymore, you know.
Parents were more interested then than now.
Yeah.
Than the children.
I don't know how it is now. Anyway, and then I worked at the high school for 16 years as the guidance counselor.
Oh.
And problems got bigger and bigger every year. I knew I was just so anxious to retire. And when I was 52, I had my 30 years in. And they were talking about making this law that you could retire at the. And I went to the library and looked at the newspaper every morning, but they didn't do it. And I taught 3 more years to wait until I could get 55 to retire. And the very next year,
they changed the law
so that you could retire at the end of 30 years.
Well, you all have had a good life on the farm, obviously.
And I've always said, you know, when I was a little girl and I just followed Daddy and I rode the horse and I just thought, well, and I'd go to my cousins over at Lexington and we'd go to movies and we'd roller skate and, well, I couldn't do that, but I'd try, you know. And you know, I thought, my goodness, I must be the most commonplace one that ever was here. You know, everybody does things but me. And now I think I'd really had the best time.
Right. But it takes you a few years to look back on it like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
To me.
Uh-huh.
Advantages definitely outweigh the disadvantages growing up on a farm.
Uh-huh.
Do you think, well, I'm sure that your working has made a big difference in the lifestyle.
Well,
had you not worked, would it have been hard for you to
Well, I don't know. I didn't name when our first little boy was born. I never meant to go to school another day in my life. I was had a baby and I was going to stay home with him and take care of him. And our superintendent came out and stood in the backyard and talked to Ermine a little while, and came on in and he said, "Evadine, I want you to plan on working this fall." He said, "We're going to open a supervisor's job and I want you to do that, and I just want you there." And I said, "But I've got a baby. I don't plan to work anymore." He said, "Well, now, you know, you can find a babysitter." And I went to see an old lady who I thought might just come and live with us. Well, that would have been problems, but I didn't know that, you know. But she began to tell me how she just coughed all the time and she'd been sick. And I thought, I wouldn't want her coughing on my baby all the time. And Ermine's mother said, "Well, Evadine, I'd keep him if you'd think I could." And so Ermine's mother kept Dwight.
Mm.
And I went on back and did that supervisor job for 3 years and wore my car out. And I got to, that's when schools were 3 miles apart all over the county, and I went to all of them.
Oh.
And the new teachers I stayed with every day for a week. And I'd get there at 8 o'clock when they did, and I'd get home after they got off at 4 o'clock, you know.
You had long hours, didn't you?
I did. But you see, I didn't have to do that. If I'd have been smart like people are now, I'd have got there at 10 o'clock and left at 2 or something. I didn't have to really beat myself out, but I thought I did. I wanted to do a good job.
Right.
And I reckon I did. It just got too much, you know. And then when Tommy was born, then I came back and taught a year out here. Oh, I stayed home the first year with him, and then I taught a year out here. And then went on back to town to work like that. It just seemed like it's been enough variety, you know, that I didn't really get tired of teaching.
And evidently like teaching.
I did. I had a good time, and I'm glad I did it, but I'm glad it's done. And I don't want to do it again. Somebody asked me about substituting, and I said, "No, if I'm going to teach, I'll just teach. I don't want to substitute. I've never done that a day.
But the lifestyle on the farm has helped.
Well, of course, Ermine and Daddy farmed, and I was gone to school, and Ermine's mama kept Dwight. And when I got home, I had to get supper, and I was tired. And, you know, it was a hassle. It really was a hassle. And my mama took care of our garden stuff and canned a lot of things for me. If I hadn't have been right here with my family and everybody helping, I couldn't have done it. And I went back to Eastern all along through that, and some night classes and one summer school and university one summer. And I got my master's in 1961. And I said then, I ought to tear that in 3 pieces and give Mama and Ermine's mama.
And the children.
Yeah, 4 pieces. And 5, Ermine too.
That you leave the children alive.
But, you know, I stayed busy. I really worked.
What is a foreign life is such a good life. But do you think young people will be able to go out and buy a farm and make a living?
I don't know. And times are different. The economy is different. And it seems like that every older generation thinks that the younger generation's gone to the dogs. You know, I've heard that from great grandpa to grandpa to daddy to me. Now here I am. Here I'm the older one, and I'm thinking that young people now don't know how to do anything.
They never had to.
I don't think girls, a lot of girls don't know how to keep house. I'm sure there are some. And they don't need to learn how to sew because they can just go buy something already made. Mm-hmm. And it's quicker and easier and it fits and pretty. And they don't need to know how to can and stuff like that because they can go to the store and grab it, eat pizza and
junk food.
Junk food. Mm-hmm. I really think it's a trend all over, not just here.
Oh, I think it's universal.
Of course, I don't know all over because I don't leave home much. But, I just see this happening.
The younger generation is not going to come back and farm.
I'll tell you, when I was little, me and the children around me made our recreation. You know, we didn't have to have a toy to have a good time. We got a plow line and jumped a rope and got our exercise. Or we just thought up something to do and did it and had a good, you know. But now children have got to have a toy to know how to have a good time. They don't know what to do.
Small children.
That was a creative thing. Excuse me, what did you say?
Older children have to have someplace to go.
Well, of course, cars, I didn't have any way to go except ride that horse, and I did that fun.
Mm-hmm.
But now everybody in the family has a car, you know, and they're just all going all directions and doing whatever they want to.
What's that done to the family?
Well,
family
unit, I've seen people on, like a man and a woman both work, and they're on different shifts, and they hardly ever see each other. And the children hardly ever, if they go to school, they hardly ever see either one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's just a breakdown as far as family.
Is there an end to it?
Well,
the economy is so bad, you feel like two people.
We wonder what life will be like, you know, when our grandchildren we have three grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And we wonder, 20 years from now, what will life be like for them? You know, I don't know.
But they're not going to come back on a farm, I don't think. Or not your grandchildren in particular, but that generation.
Well, I
wonder.
Farmers feed the world.
Right.
And then are we going to go with starvation next, or what?
I think we're going to have to get to the rock bottom and pull ourselves back up, maybe. Realize.
But now, there is hard work on a farm. You know, people will get out here and jog around Eastern's campus and run miles. But if they were in a hay field, they couldn't do that.
They wouldn't last 2 hours.
No,
that's
they
right.
couldn't do it.
That's exactly right.
And all this energy that they're chasing around doing, they just, work is out of the question. They just don't seem to want to do that.
Manual labor. Those people have never done manual labor.
Mm-mm.
Never in their
and
life.
Yet they have the energy to do it.
Uh-huh.
If they were so inclined or in a place where they needed
where
to,
they
maybe
needed
they
to.
Would if they were in a place where they were needed.
Well, if I went out now and bought a farm and had to buy the equipment and, of course, pay payments on to the bank for the farm, could I make a living?
Land is high right now. You'd have to have some buildings. You'd have to have the machinery. And it's high. Everything's just too high to reach now, the way right now. And I just don't know. There was a farm sold by us, the old Uncle Jordan Dunaway farm. It's like over on this old railroad. There's no tracks there anymore. It's a road now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's off of that, back in a place nobody ever sees. It's just you're there, you get there, you're there, and you come back out the same way you went in. And there was 161 acres sold that just not long ago for $73,000.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That's how land sells right around us right now, you know.
But that was with no
And Armin says with this old farm, you know, like we'd get, if at that rate, we have 250 acres, something like that. It'd be like $250,000 maybe.
Or more.
With the improvements here and the land all clear. This farm is about one-third woods.
You cut your own wood then? You said you heated with
coal. Yeah.
You cut your own wood off the farm?
Uh-huh. Armin takes the chainsaw right over there. Well, we did have gas furnaces. Mom and Daddy put in a gas furnace, and we got a new one after we came here in 1968. Daddy died, and we moved up here with Mom. And we had gas down in the house where we are. And it just got so high, it was like $600 the last year we used gas, and the thing almost blew up. And the men came to fix it and unhooked it and said it's not safe. And so we had a wood-burning stove in this flue right here, and we used that. Right after we took Mama to the nursing home, in 2 weeks the furnace went bad. Just worked out perfect that way. And Ermine and I just met, practically lived in the kitchen that winter, you know. Mm-hmm. Then we tore that flue down. You talk about a mess. Have you ever torn a flue down?
Oh, yes.
And then put that one up. And it's safe now. And we have a fireplace insert in that room, in the living room, and a wood-burning stove in here, and we're warmer than we were with the furnace.
Oh, much warmer.
Because you could come in cold and stand over one of these little vents, like just like that one, and you just never did really get good and warm. You just kind of weren't so cold. But we didn't have bad colds.
With the furnace
and kind of shivering around and wearing our sweaters in the house, and so we just never did get cold.
Kind of built up an immunity to it, maybe.
Maybe.
Well, I know we have a wood insert in the fireplace, and I don't know how we live without it.
No,
I think
it has a fan on
years.
It that
that keeps everything out,
and it goes. It's warmer upstairs than it is in the living room, you know.
So it heats well.
Uh-huh.
Well, you have your own wood. If you had to buy it, it would be
quite
expensive.
Right.
Like,
yeah, we just go out and cut some wood
when you need it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the great part of a farm life.
Uh-huh.
But one more thing I want to ask you about crops. You said your husband was growing peppers now.
That's the second year we've tried that. Last year we had an acre of peppers. This is the Campbell, some initials, Campbell Company. It's like Campbell Soup Company.
Mm-hmm.
In Tennessee or wherever they're, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And they have a weigh station and a place to sell your pepper at Bateville.
Oh, you have to take them to Bateville.
Yes, and you go there to get your plants. They furnish the plants. And my job when they set peppers, and me and my sister-in-law and I, sorted the little ones that were too small to set and drew out and, you know, put the good plants that they could set in a place so that they could just take them and just keep setting. They set them with the tobacco together.
That's what I wanted to know, how did they set them?
And then, I can't remember that last year Ermine chopped peppers like he's doing now. Because they were in a different field and the weeds just didn't seem to grow up so much. But this year he put them in a more sandy place. And the weeds have come, maybe all this rain.
Probably, especially the last 2 weeks.
But
was
in
there a
August,
base on them?
You get an acre.
So there is a base, you can't just raise.
No, and they furnish plants for an acre, and you just set out an acre, and that's it. And last year, we took, I don't know how many, like pickup truck loads. All that will round up, you know. We took about 5 loads in the pickup truck, and then the big truck holds maybe, I don't know how, but, you know, lots more than more like three pickup loads maybe. And he took a big load like that. I have a picture of it. He parked it out here in the shade overnight and took it the next morning. And right in the middle of all of that, I fell on the back steps out here and broke my foot. So I had a cast. And one of the girls that had been helping pick peppers wrote on my cast, anything to keep from picking peppers.
That's pretty good.
But I kind of like to do that.
Is there good money in
peppers? Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, they're talking about peppers. Is there good money in them?
We just cleared about $1,000 on them last year.
On an acre?
Mm-hmm.
Was that counting your labor? Did you have to hire pickers?
We didn't hire much labor. Erman's brother had some. They helped us, and we helped them.
So again, a share type of labor.
Yes. They told me last year that you can freeze peppers, you know, stuff peppers and freeze them. Well, now, one of our neighbors did some of that. But you can freeze just the peppers.
Just
and then put your fresh stuffing in when you thaw them, and I like them better.
Are they good?
Mm-hmm.
Frozen whole ones?
They're real good.
Mm-hmm. I know the chopped ones I use, but I've never frozen whole ones.
Right.
Well, you have to pick them when they're a certain size.
They're supposed, for this company, you're supposed to pick them when they start to turn red. You know, you pick through the patch, and if there's small ones or they're green, or, you know, you just kind of leave them till next time. Mm-hmm. We picked over our patch about 3 times last year.
So they use them for
a After it frosts, they won't buy any more. If you have pepper at home and you think you're going to pick again, and if it frosts on them, they can't use them.
They won't buy any more. But now they furnish the plants.
Right.
And you furnish the labor and the fertilizer.
Mm-hmm. This year, after Erman had to go over there and chop the weeds out, he said, I don't know if we can do this anymore or not. He's letting some of his other work go while he's doing that. That was one job he didn't figure on.
Well, there's not much mechanization in that job either.
No.
There's no pickers yet.
No, that's right.
Well, tell him it's better than cucumbers at any rate.
Well, our son, Dwight, the oldest one, and his little cousin, Jimmy, they had that same sort of thing with the cucumbers one time.
Mm-hmm.
So they raised an acre of cucumbers, and they're hard to see.
Yes.
And they couldn't hardly pick them. I'm sure they just got hype up. And they went over there to plant them, and they were just kids, you know, 14 or 15 years old. They got tired of planting cucumber seed, so they decided they'd just bury the rest of them. And they didn't know that they'd come up and just be so thick that anybody'd ever know.
You have to be very careful with us.
With what you bury.
Well, did they make any money on theirs?
I think so. We just took them to South Irving. You know, there was a grading thing they went through there that lets the big ones roll out and then the next size and the next.
But it wouldn't be worth growing them now for them. It would not. The labor is too much.
Well, I'm sure we wouldn't try it. I don't know. Some people might still grow them. I guess somebody does.
Somebody does, but it wouldn't be worth it to grow them as cucumbers.
No.
It just wouldn't
be. I don't think so. I don't think I want to hip hunt them.
Well, your son, you inherit the farm. Your sons will inherit.
Well, yeah.
And like you said, one may come back and...
He's doing drafting. Now, the other one is a minister, and he's going to Clear Creek Baptist Assembly School in Pineville.
Mm-hmm.
And he has one more year to do his fourth year.
Mm-hmm.
And then if he's pastor of a church, he'll just do that and settle down someplace. Or if he's not a pastor by that time, he'll go on to seminary. And, you know, there's not much future. Maybe someday he'd like to retire and be here when he's old.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not going to farm. He's not going to have time to farm. And Dwight is doing drafting, and Dwight has always liked the farm. So, you know, it just depends.
He may come back and
See, I don't. We just have to wait and see what happens as the time passes.
We were talking about young people not realizing what work is. What's going to happen to all the small farms, the family-owned farms?
You know, a lot
next generation.
A lot of farms are just divided up. Now, Erman says, if we were going to sell this farm, see, it goes from over this next hill out here on this road going that way, back around this way and out to the first brick house on the Regis Road. And that's a lot of road frontage, you see.
Mm-hmm.
We'd sell lots for houses and make more than we would to sell the whole farm.
Oh, yes.
You know.
Triple probably.
Yes. Yeah. But Erman says if you sell any off, then you're selling your pastures in case Dwight ever wants to come back.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just holding on, you know.
And it seems like with you and your husband, it's kind of a love for the land, too. You really don't want to get rid of one lot. You know,
well,
it's kind of quite obvious.
We own across the road there where the tobacco patch is and out this way, up not very far, just to the top of the hill, just right out there. But all down in that left side of the road is just woods. Now, Daddy used to have cow pasture down in there. In fact, he raised corn down in there a year or two. But you have to go a half mile before you come to the open place,
mm-hmm.
you know, and now it's grown up. It doesn't even have a good fence around it, so that we don't use it for anything.
So that you wouldn't feel bad about selling
it. I'd sell that in a minute. But Erman don't want to sell the tobacco barn and the tobacco patch,
mm-hmm.
and that a little hay field right there at the front of the road, you know, and
anything
he doesn't
want
to sell anything along that roadway.
Anything that he could
but
see.
But way over in there, we'd sell the back side of that.
How many acres are back there?
Seems like he told somebody around 30 or 35 or something like that.
Yeah,
and Erman says nobody wanted probably but a hippie. And then they wouldn't be good neighbors, maybe. They'd come right up to the top of that little hill and just steal us. I'm saying things here I shouldn't. I don't know that all hippies steal or anything like that now.
Well, the undesirable people, maybe.
Well, yeah. You know, everybody's somebody. We don't mean that there's people we not get along with or anything like that. But Erman just says, in case somebody, it could be some real nice somebody that we think is, but they wouldn't be.
Right. And it's such a good place for illegal activities if you're back off the road. And
maybe. You know, we might just start something there that we just wish we had.
Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be worth it.
Mm-mm.
Sounds like a nice little farm for someone.
Mm-hmm. It would, maybe. There used to be an old house right straight on over the hill past the tobacco patch out there. Down the hill in the woods and then on that little point, there's a chimney, an old chimney pile of rocks there now. Wash Woodston lived there and helped great-grandpa in the tan yard.
Hmm. And it's still there.
I think his name is Woodson.
Woodson?
Uh-huh.
W-O-D-S-E-N?
Washington Woodson.
Uh-huh.
He's buried over here in the cemetery.
Mm.
He and his wife and a brother. Uh-huh.
Well, can you think of anything else you'd like to add? Summation?
I feel like I've told you everything I've ever thought about in my life.
Right.
No, only that I just wouldn't want to live anyplace else. I'm just happy as I can be right here, and I like it just like it is. And I mean, there's things to the house I'd like to do.
But there would always be things.
Maybe I'd like to glass in this three-man big back porch that's on this side.
Mm-hmm.
And
but then you would find something else you wanted to do.
Surely. And we do something every once in a while, just little things. But there's no great big things.
If you had your time to go over, if you were young, you and your husband just married, would you pick staying on the farm again?
Yes, I would. Mm-hmm. Erman asked me one day, how would you like to be, I don't know who'd been around here that day, just somebody, young person. he said, how would you like to be 16 and live all your life over again? And I said, do all that again? I wouldn't. I'm glad I'm this far. You know, I'm glad I lived when I did and things were like they were. And that it's been good.
And you wouldn't want to change your life.
And I don't mean when I say life's been good that we haven't had any troubles. You know, there's been troubles. My mother and daddy had a baby that died at birth, and then there was me, and then I had a little sister who died when she was 7 months old. And, you know, there's been sickness and things happened, and like, the cattle got the bang, that disease, you know, and, you know.
Regular farm life troubles.
Really. Somebody get hurt once in a while. There's hazards to farm life, you know.
But it's still a good life, and you wouldn't change it.
I guess anything else you were doing, there'd be some things
hazards.
Like that, too,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But you wouldn't change it.
No, I wouldn't. I don't want to move anyplace else. Or you know, I'm really maybe a little too satisfied at home because I just hate to go to town even.
I would too if I lived on this farm.
I just like it where I am and I'm happy. This girl who called me just now, she and I are doing the marriage records for Estill County.
Oh, you are?
And we have the manuscript part finished and we're working on the index. We have it about, the manuscript is 729 pages and the index will make it like 800 pages in all.
So you really haven't retired. You do keep busy.
We're doing that and then right now, and hopefully in 2 weeks we'll have it finished and out, our church history. The church where we go is a Thomas Baptist Church, a mile out the road.
Is that the same church you've always gone to?
Uh-huh. And